Welcome to Slice of PI, where we take quick hot takes on the news whenever we feel like it. I'm your host, Matt, as usual, and with me is my co-host and flying spaghetti voter, Borge.
I should start a chapter in the Philippines of Flying Pansit Man. Flying Pansit Monster. Okay, PI nyo, PI nating lahat, Borge here at your service.
Yes, and in this slice, we have a very special activity, so it's close to the news. We decided to do a steel man session for all the candidates because right now I'm sure all of you are thinking of whether or not to vote or what's the point of looking at our candidates right now because a lot is going on. And it's usually negative mudslinging and negative campaigning. So we thought we would present an alternative method, an alternative approach, which is steel manning. Now, Borge, you've heard of steel manning. We've talked about steel manning before, but perhaps we can explain to our listeners what steel manning is and how we will approach the presidential candidates.
Okay. Steel manning is not about stealing men. Yeah. But steel man is you try to formulate the best argument for something. Hmm. So the best argument in favor of something. So that's a steel man. Now, logically, I think the value of steel manning is not only to extract what is, you know, the best version of something, but it's also a way to measure how much or how difficult it is to steel man someone or someone's campaign. So, I think for those who want to practice steel man the approach in future elections, your measurement would be how difficult was it to steel man someone. And I think that would indicate whether that person or that candidate is actually, you know, is it actually worth it? So you need to excuse and ignore so many things. I think that's another way to measure it. How many things do you need to ignore to formulate the best argument for someone?
Yes. Actually, if you notice, most people talk about like straw manning. We say straw manning, it's arguing based on negative, weak caricatures or exaggerations of the opponent's argument. And sometimes it's used perhaps as a technique to convince other people. Say, for example, you rephrase an argument say, to the best of your ability that they would accept it, saying they would, yes, that's my argument. You know, you're not mischaracterizing it. But at the same time, it's not really about convincing other people. It's also about trying to actually understand the other argument. Like John Stuart Mill says, the person who only understands his own argument understands very little about the issue. And even like we've mentioned this before, Thomas Aquinas would normally formulate arguments of his opponent, you know, better than the arguments that actually the opponent actually said, and he would still take it apart. It's a part of demonstrating how much you understood the issue or even trying to find the truth regardless of your own biases. And we want to demonstrate that both of us in this slice of PI. So it might be big because there are like 10 candidates. Some will be longer than others, you know, but this is our best way to try to understand the presidential candidates right now. And we will be doing this on alphabetical order according to the ballot. So are you ready, Borge? Or the steel man, all of them.
Lahata. Something we need to do to promote the method. Kasi again, sa Pilipinas kasi, our method for analyzing candidates are, you know, I just say it's outdated. It's vulnerable to biases. It's vulnerable to biases.
Reminder, we're trying to formulate the best reason to vote for the candidate. You know, it's something that they have, maybe something that they themselves might not have expressed. Something that we see, and there's not always a clear common standard since each of them present their own angles and perspectives. Yeah. So they don't have the same, we can't use the same metric.
I think we can also do that. What perspective are they embodying in trying to steel man all of them?
All right. Okay, so in case you have, as much as possible, please stay with us throughout this slice. We'll be putting timestamps for each candidate. If you want to know about a candidate, you can skip and click
the timestamp.
But yeah, if you have a favorite one or least favorite one, whatever, as much as possible. But as much as possible, listen to the entire recording. Okay. Yeah. So the first one is a bit not that familiar. He first came out in the SMNI debates. Ernesto Abella, former presidential spokesperson of the Duterte administration. So, Borge, what do you think about this first candidate?
Okay, Ernesto Abella, his perspective is, of course, going at the one of the essential dimensions of an economy, especially a developing country, which is agriculture. So again, his primary platform is his best argument for Ernesto Abella, his argument for industrializing agriculture. So for the longest time, we have been anchoring agricultural development on, you know, comprehensive agrarian reform, but there have been little attention given to the issue of industrializing agriculture. So it's not only about redistributing land. So it's, and Abella recognized that it's not only about owning land, it's about being supported by the government so that you would be more productive, so that the land can be more productive. So I think that would be his best argument. And that is a neglected area in Philippine policy, economic policy for the longest time, except for NEDA, which keeps on repeating the need for, you know, developing agriculture. But then again, NEDA is a powerless institution. So yeah, and I think that that's the best argument for him, agriculture.
Yeah, all right, interesting. I'm not sure I picked up on that in the debates, but it's good that you did. Yeah, agriculture, we're supposed to be a farming like country, you know, and very, our agricultural industry is usually dying. You know, did we even have an industry in the first place? And so it's, I think it's very important that the candidate actually highlights that. But for me, I'm not sure.
Did I confuse Abella with Nograles?
Norberto.
I think I confused them. Oh shit.
Oh no. Okay. So do you wanna say Mulligan?
Mulligan. I think Abella's argument is the Filipino spirit, you know, the youth. I think that was his argument, right? I confused him with someone else.
Oh no. You mean Pichai?
Nograles Gonzalez is the one. Gonzalez, Norberto Gonzalez is the one arguing for agriculture. But Abella is the one arguing for the youth, I think. Making the youth proud and prepared.
I mean, he's not exactly a member of the youth, so it's a bit difficult for him to communicate with the youth. I mean, that's funny. It's easy to... They come in pairs, actually. Like, they're like two candidates that came in as a buffer between Bongbong Marcos and Leo de Guzman in the SMNI debates. So it's interesting that we confuse them. They're like Ernie and Bert. So, but anyway,
what do you remember about Abella? Let's see. What do you remember about?
Well, he has a great voice, but I actually had to look at a separate interview. And apparently his focus is on enjoining civil society and participating in governance, which in a way, a lot of the Filipino administrations do that already, especially in the Aquino administrations, and to an extent maybe Duterte, but because Duterte is so disliked by civil society, you know, perhaps there's to a lesser degree. So it would be good if he were able to enjoin them again into the fold, which is not exactly radical. It's just in some ways a return to business. And another notable position is he's going to continue the drug war, but not as quote unquote dramatic. And not as bloody, you know, but still strict on drugs. And I think what he represents is a sort of a combination of continuity with what works in the Duterte administration and what needs to be returned, which is the active civil society. So in a way, if you look at the comments on videos featuring Abella, people are actually very impressed by his answer. He's a technocrat. So in other words, he has technical expertise.
Yeah.
So he has a very, again, technical answers to everything, which may explain why he's not as popular. So that's what he can bring to the table, his technical expertise, at least in being in government.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be radical, but he is rational and smart about it. So that's one interesting thing about Abella.
Yeah.
Okay, shall we move on?
I checked it. Abellio was the one advocating for agriculture, industrialization.
Okay.
Okay, so oh, my memory was correct.
Oh, there you go. Anyway. Next, we have Gael Yodi de Guzman, who is surprisingly quite popular on the internet. There are a lot of memes featuring him. He's a labor leader. The CA represents, you know, a comrade, the Filipino word for comrade. And he has a lot of roots in the Marxist civil society, leftist civil society for the workers. The weird thing about this one is, despite, again, my misgivings with the labor and Marxist left, this is the first time that Kalyodi, a labor leader, was able to become a presidential candidate. So this is a big thing. That's why it's very historic. And at the same time, while a lot of his arguments are old, I think just because they're old doesn't mean we should ignore them. In fact, we need to look at things like minimum wage, employer-employee relations, things like that. And the fact that the pandemic has aggravated it to the point where they would field a candidate, even though no one knew who he was, but he's slowly becoming formidable articulator of labor issues, then I think, it would do a lot to for the country if, at very least, doesn't have a big party, but if we had a labor-oriented president, we might be able to heal a lot of the damage that is sustained by employees and laborers. So I don't know, but maybe you can say something more about this since know more about labor issues.
Okay. Parang hirap-hirap kang i-steal man si Kalyodi. Parang hirap-hirap ka, but yeah.
This is part of the exercise, yeah.
Okay, so I'm reiterating what you said. He's the best representative for labor rights in the Philippines. But to add on to that one, I think his platform, progressive as it is, can actually absorb the other platforms that are leaning to. So I think he is the best representative of a progressive policy or progressive campaign platform that is closer to being radical, but more or less progressive in a sense that his focus is on actual structural changes in both the economy and in politics. So, yeah, he is, if we go back to what a representative is, meaning the embodiment of a certain sector, that's one interpretation of being a representative, instead of, you know, embodying a general notion of what the public good is, you represent a specific sector of society, then Kalyodi is the best representative for the working class, which constitute, again, majority of the entire electorate.
He's kind of like the Bernie Sanders of our country. You know, he says things like the World Bank and the WTO, World Trade Organization. Like, these are old arguments, you know, but I think just because they're, a lot of people dismiss him for that since it has to update the arguments. But at the same time, maybe there are still problems that we've simply neglected and forgotten. So
he's the reminder that old arguments live because old problems remain.
He's also a very staunch critic of the Marxists, which I think quite a few candidates have been a bit scared to do for some reason. So he's outspoken, along with Walden Bellio, who is a vice presidential candidate. He's kind of cute, but we'll see how he does. Anyway, we're only doing presidential candidates. Okay, let's go to the third one, and I think it's going to be one of your favorites. Manila Mayor Isko Moreno Domogoso. Yeah.
Isko Moreno.
So, what do you think about Isko Moreno? Yeah.
Isko Moreno, his campaign embodies two things. You know, on one side of being progressive, which is moving on. So that's one dimension of being progressive, which is you move on from existing problems or, you know, chronic problems, chronic debates. And to replace the gap that will be left, he promises good governance. And his catchphrase of the certainty of law. So the best argument for Isko is that as a seasoned local government leader and a seasoned politician, the best argument for him is he embodies that results can dictate, you know, should dictate policy. So you adopt policies that have worked, and you elaborate or you develop policies that have worked so that it could work better. So he's pragmatist. So if we define pragmatism as emphasizing the value of something based on its results, based on experimentation, Isko is the best example of what the pragmatic candidate is. And I said not only the results but also experimentation, because he had innovated much in Manila. So, and another argument for Isko is this is a better version of translating local experience into national policy. Right. It's a better version because that version had been an older version had been advocated by Binay, but Makati is a deviant case because Makati is a wealthy city.
Yes.
But the Manila, racked with budget deficiencies before, was able to recover.
Crime lords.
Yeah, crime lords. Yeah. So was able to recover from such problems. So I think his argument of translating the experience of Manila to the national level is a bit more realistic than saying that Makati and anyone can be Makati. So that's quite unrealistic. So this was providing a better version of that.
Not to mention, people forget. Well, people actually call him Duterte light precisely because his rhetoric reminds them of Duterte. Say, ganito sa Davao, pwede maging ganito yung Pilipinas. O ganito tayo sa Manila, pwede maging Manila ang buong Pilipinas. So, which again is it's a valid observation, but it doesn't encapsulate really who Isko is. And I think, Leni in particular, she actually captured one of the nature and in the same sense, a flaw of Isko, which is because he's a pragmatist, he's basically very flexible. He can adjust. And I think that is also a strength of his, because if people see you as someone who is dogmatic about certain things, like for instance, about EDSA, about Christian issues like divorce, same-sex marriage, etc., then they might be averse to you. But actually, him being flexible can actually catch all. In fact, out of all the candidates, I have to say, he is the most like a professional politician. Meaning he really wants things. He does things just to get elected, which is both good and bad, but at the same time, again, less dogmatic in comparison to the others. In fact, people call him Duterte light, but in a way, he's also Lenny light, which means hindi naman siya Duterte, hindi naman siya ganun kabastos. So he's also a bit polished as Lenny. He is also on the ground like Lenny. He has results like Lenny. So and that's the weird thing. I think the strongest for him is his him being the midpoint between Duterte and at least the opposition. Yeah. Like in a way, if it swings too far in the pendulum, then you might be preparing for another Duterte to emerge. So in other words, it's to choose an Isko administration is low risk for the progressives and also low risk for the Duterte allies or the traditionalists. In a way, he tries to offer a bit of everything, which is an interesting position. It's particularly even his issue on like the Marcoses. He has both stood clear, but also attacked the Marcoses, and he's also attacked Lenny in equal measure. So he also prepares himself to be that candidate. If you're tired of the Bong Bong Lenny kind of rivalry, he is a good candidate. So
he's offering so much. He's offering so many things. It's bound together by a simple principle, which is whatever works.
Yes. So he's a pragmatist. Both of us agree. Yeah. Oh, baka halata na ano? Baka siya yung bagong paborito natin. Well, anyway. So next one
is
Norberto Gonzalez, the other old guy.
Lolibert.
Oh my gosh. He's a former defense chief under the Arroyo administration, and I believe he is the head of the PDSP. That's Partido Democratico Socialista ng Pilipinas. So he's a
Partido Democratico Socialista ng Pilipinas.
Yes, the Democratic Socialist. Yeah. And I think I mentioned this before. He would probably be the closest, a version of me running for office, actually. Because we have the similar positions on a lot of things, in terms of the combination of welfare and democratic principles. And what his you know, it, despite that personal connection, you know, being SOCTEM, even I had the SOCTEM pass. For one thing, he's a technocrat. He has proven himself in terms of service, and he performed very well in the SMNI debates, particularly in international relations, since he was the former defense chief. So perhaps he can perhaps bring us back to that balance during the Arroyo administration, when we're not quite as close as China, but perhaps balance back with the US. So I think his present record would speak for itself, but because he's a steel man, but sadly I may not even vote for him because, you know, on other factors, but at least he has a similar like strength and problem with Don Ernie Abella being proven technocrats, but also part of questionable administrations. But yeah,
come on, steel man.
That's the strongest thing. They have proven records, been part of government, but that's all I can say. Unless you have something about Noveto.
Yeah, he is also progressive, less radical than Caliote, of course. But again, they're both socialists. So again, the argument is he's also providing agriculture and labor oriented policies. I think he has a more clear idea of how to achieve an independent foreign policy. And he's the most lolo.
He may not get the most votes, pero siya yung pinakamaraming mano sa lahat ng mga kandidato.
Manoble candidate.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's the, he's a good balance between experience and, you know, progressive thinking.
Okay, more than Cagliotti.
Yeah, so I think he, so if you would say that Isko Moreno is between, you know, between Lenny and Bongbong Marcos. And Duterte. So I think that Norberto Gonzalez is standing in a different continuum. So I think that's the continuum that Caliote is also inside. So progressive to more conservative.
All right.
Yeah.
Next. It's been 20 minutes, you know, and we're also halfway done. Let's try. We can do this. Former Senator Ping Lacson. So what do you think about Ping Lacson?
Yeah, I think he's also part of that continuum of experience and progressive. But I think among the progressive, I think he's the more conservative one. So he just wants to reassert rule of law in its most extreme way. That's why I would call him a progressive. I wouldn't call him a conservative. So he wants to implement the rule of law and maximize how it can be implemented. His image as a policeman, as a disciplinarian, of course, it appeals to old Filipino and French values of discipline and order. So I think Ping Lacson, in comparison to Lenny Robredo, he's the more aggressive reformer. So that the best argument is his reformist stance has teeth and has more or less focus on implementing the law. So law oriented.
Actually, I have nothing to add except siya ang totoong Duterte light. Honestly, that's what I think.
Yeah.
He's also more polished than Duterte, but at the same time, he has similar aggressive authoritarian tendencies. He may not be. But do you think he has a tendency to have like death squads?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I think he's Duterte light because he would still remain within the framework of the law. Duterte is willing enough to step outside it, but Panfilo Lacson would like to maximize. If he cannot implement or if he cannot sponsor more additional legislation that would make things more extreme, then he would not do it. But as long as it's within the law, he'll do it. So, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's clearly one of the most experienced politicians.
Yeah, he knows his numbers, Jesus. So I think he knows.
Yeah.
Comparison to Lenny, Panfilo Lacson knows his data. So he's the best one who has the best grasp of data among all the candidates.
I think he ran twice for president, but he also lost the most times then since he never was president. So I have experience. We'll see
once. This is the second time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 2004, right? Anyway, okay. Anyway, the next one is a bit tricky. He's one of the lesser known ones, but let's see what happens. Faisal Mangondato. And the weird thing about Mangondato is, based on the surveys, he actually outshined Gagliotti, who was very popular on the internet. I think, but most of these votes came from the Mindanao area, because he is openly Muslim with a Muslim headdress, maybe. Yeah. And Muslim beard, if there's such a thing. But I think that's, it's not easy for me to find his positions, but what I do know is he's for federalism in a way that is beneficial for his Muslim brethren. And I think it would be interesting to see a Muslim candidate for the Philippine presidency, or maybe a Muslim president. He's a bit low energy, but I think he has maintained an anti-corruption stance as usual against Bureau of Customs. And I think a further step that, well, Duterte promised federalism, he might actually Mangondato might actually deliver and choose to continue it, because there's already been a draft. You and I both know that there have been drafts of federalism during the Duterte administration, but it never pushed through. So yeah, that's all I can say about Mangondato. Yeah. But I'd say it'd be interesting. We don't know much about it yet. Let's see what he says.
Yeah. In addition to that, I think among all the candidates, Faisal Mangondato is he's a visionary. That's the best word that I can use. He's a visionary who has a grasp, a simple but clear grasp of the essential problems in Philippine politics, which is you really cannot do anything with the current system. That is his catchphrase. If you cannot do anything in the debates, that was his catchphrase. You cannot do it. You cannot do jack shit without changing the system. And I think he has a clear and simple grasp of it. And it's a visionary in terms of, he projects a general image of Philippines as, emerging out of its old system. So it's not vague. So that's his vision, which is that we emerge out of the old system. Hindi yung, make Philippines great again, so on and so forth, but his vision is actually to break the current system. But he's a visionary. I think that's the best argument for Faisal Mangondato.
Yeah. I didn't get that. That's actually, are you pretty good at this? I'm sure. That's a great message, but again, it doesn't really, his delivery doesn't match the radical and passionate energy. It's weird.
So he's more of a sage-like figure, along with the beard. So, coolly saying what is essential. No need to shout, because he knows that what he's saying is true. And true enough, it is. we're gonna do really jack shit with the system.
You're really good at steel manning old people. I'm sorry, I sound ageist. My goodness. I'm so sorry. Oh. Well, showing confusion, filial piety.
Yeah, best in good.
Yeah, best in filial piety. Anyway, okay, this one's a bit challenging. One of the most controversial ones. Woo, can you do this? I don't know. You know what? It's a good thing you're going first. This is BBM Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. All right. What is the best best argument for BBM? Again, fair practice, academic.
I need to crack my knuckles first. Best argument for BBM is, first, he appeals to something deeply seated in Filipino psyche, which is unity. As far as my own data is concerned, we are intolerant, but our level of intolerance is directed at, arriving at unity. So we can tolerate different... we have a level of tolerance as well. So we can tolerate different perspectives as long as we arrive at the same answer. So Bongbong Marcos embodies that long-standing and widely shared value of unity among ordinary Filipinos. So he embodies that need or that opinion, great opinion, that unity is the panacea for our social problems.
Yes.
And Bongbong Marcos is, of course, like Isko, he anchors on the need to move on from old rivalries, old problems. So I can say that he is to an extent progressive in that sense, because old debates, old problems, old rivalries, they are by nature keeping us down unless we learn from it properly, which is a different issue altogether. But for Bongbong Marcos, he wants like Isko to just, move on. And like Isko, and I think a bit more conservative than Isko, which is he wants to maximize the limits of the system. His assumptions that corruption cannot be removed, may sound cynical, and personally, I do believe it is thoroughly cynical for the sake of the ruling class, but it appeals to, you know, sense of pragmatism among Filipinos. It's there. It's time to, you know, minimize it if you can, but try to work within the limitations of the system. So he is to an extent also pragmatic, but not experimental. So he's partially pragmatic, but not like Isko that is actually experimental. So Bongbong is the more traditional form of pragmatism. So he is the vote for those who would like stability, those who would like harmony. That's why unity reverberates to people, because it is, you know, peace-loving entities. So he would claim the vote for that. So that's, well, I think I lost several brain cells for that, but that's me still, man.
That's our best to try and steal, man. Well, oh my God. Are you okay?
Your turn.
Oh God. Actually, that's really good. I'm actually impressed that you're able to say something good about Bong. No, but you're right. I do agree in saying that unity is actually a very good, simple, but resonant campaign theme or promise. In fact, it's much easier to digest and understand than Angat Buhay Lahat, which is his main that of his main rival, Lenny Robredo. And the thing, yeah, unity. On the one, I mean, I think you and I both know that we've been talking to people on the internet about Bongbong Marcos, and we asked them, like, why do they support them?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's leading in all of the surveys. So there must be something there. It's been consistent, you know. I mean, besides the usual instinct to question the methodology, let's assume that, and of course, we have no doubt, but let's assume that all the methodology of the surveys are true and it is capturing a real sentiment that a majority of our people want Bongbong Marcos as president, despite him being the son of a former dictator.
Yeah.
On the one hand, when you ask Bongbong Marcos supporters, why Bongbong Marcos? It's usually, ganito ang EDSA system. Ganito yung mga dilawan. Ganito yung mga kakampink. Ganito, kawawa naman siya dahil ang bias ng media. So it's basically, a vote for him is a critique against their perceived corruption of other traditional politicians, the Liberal Party, the weird thing about the pink move is that they still see it as a fake gesture. So really, perhaps the best way, well, the best argument for that is actually a true punishment for traditional politicians of the progressive side, so they can truly learn from the certain elitism, a certain progressivism that no longer works. So that's one. The other one, it's real, but most of the supporters of Bongbong Marcos are avowed conservatives. And I don't necessarily understand it. Like, you know, he hasn't been in the debates, so I can't really say if he is a conservative. But again, perhaps continuity, and again, a rejection of the EDSA system and a return to the martial law system, which again, they probably missed. So there must be something, some wisdom there, in that there must be some a strong authority to unite the Philippines. That's the weird thing. It is a mythical language, you know, rather than, it's like rhetorical, yes, but mythical. You know, people combat them with facts, but mythical. I think we need that myth.
Yeah.
We talked about how EDSA was a myth, but this myth of Marcos as a father of a nation might be effective, and it has been proven effective.
Yeah.
So even if it is, well, a lot of people who are invested in the EDSA system might believe that it is a lie. You know, perhaps it might be a noble lie that if it is effective, why not use Marcos? So that might actually be successful in uniting the Philippines.
Yeah.
I know. So that is, I don't know if you agree with that, but that's I can say.
Congratulations. He survived. In a nutshell, the vote for Bongbong Marcos is a vote for recognizing what it is and moving on. So that's the best argument for it. So again, peace and unity is the word. So,
oh my gosh!
Okay,
it's been 35 minutes. It's pati na lang.
Pati na lang.
Oh, that was. I felt dirty all of a sudden.
Gago.
Again, I am. It's, in one way, it's helping us get used to the fact of like any of these might be a good president, you know. So yeah, we're trying to imagine, stretch our brain cells.
And
the, right, the next one,
manifestation of, you know, manifestation of shared values, which is must be subject to analysis. So we must do this.
Yes. Okay. Okay. The next one is also very infamous, perhaps even more infamous than Bobo Marcos. Probably represents what Bobo Marcos would be if he were in the debate. which is Jose Montemayor Jr., who, believe it or not, has 7 PhDs. he's a doctor. He is an attorney. He is an educator. So he claims to be, well, has a long record of service as a civil leader. He represents association of doctors and, you know, and of citizens, frontliners. So it's impressive on paper, but the way that he has performed in the debates has been questionable. But again, this is an exercise. What's the best argument? This is tough. Okay. I suppose one noticeable position he has is he's an anti-vaxxer, despite being a doctor. And while anti-vaxxer is clearly at this point a very old, outdated term, you know, I suppose doubt regarding the vaccines might prove healthy. Maybe like he represents those. There's still quite a few people, maybe not a lot, but a noticeable segment of the population is still doubtful of the vaccinations. So maybe that might be good, and perhaps the debates may not be a best avenue for his expertise to, you know, manifest themselves. Maybe it's an office. So you maybe give it a chance. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you and I believe that the degrees might be, but have value. So maybe just give it a chance. I don't know.
okay.
Montemayor.
Montemayor. It's my comment on Montemayor. I think he would be the best vote for the libertarians, those who value personal liberty, entrepreneurship, business mindedness among Filipinos. He is the best vote for if you want that one. So other than that, I'm checking his degrees right now. So yeah, dami. He'll probably be but okay, in line with his training, his work experience as a doctor, and his activities in civil society, I think he will have grassroots knowledge, or at least detailed knowledge on, you know, public health and legal matters as well. So I think he is I don't want to call him a technocrat, but he can be a technocrat. Serve in a public office? I don't think he did serve in a public office. He had been in the private sector for a long time.
Grassroots. Yeah.
Yeah. So he cannot be called a technocrat, but he can be. So he is I don't want to say fresh blood, but he can be one of our better technocrats if he holds public office.
Okay. Let's move on. Senator Manny Pacquiao. Okay, it's interesting. You and I have expressed perhaps initial support for him. Woo! I don't know if it's as a joke, but there must be some merit to him. But yeah, the people's champion, Manny Pacquiao, former congressman, current senator, and a Paul Tsai graduate from the University of Makati. What do you think about Manny Pacquiao? Like, do you still believe in him? Like,
Manny Pacquiao. I think the best argument for Manny Pacquiao is this: he knows how to learn. He knows how to grow. He's the embodiment of growing in public office. So yes, he is known for his, you know, absenteeism and his thoroughly conservative views. But for the past few months, ever since the start of the presidential campaign, I think he knows how to push himself and he knows how to learn. And that would make a, you know, according to Machiavelli, there are three types of brains. The first one is someone who knows how to think on its own, which is great. The other one is someone who knows how to learn and listen to others, or to sort out good from bad advice. And I think that is Manny Pacquiao. He is the next best thing. As long as he's surrounded by good advisors, I think he would do good. He also embodies the old resistance to the EDSA regime, which is, you know, the old Arab style populism, which is he's may puso para sa masa, which is something that is shared between Caliodi, Isko, and him. So that's the narrative that they're trying to So old welfarist approach. But again, he has held his ground on other policy matters. Again, he knows how as Sir July said, he's the most
improved.
Yeah, most improved candidate. And if he continues that in public office, if he continues that in the presidency, then I would prefer someone who knows little but knows how to learn more than someone who knows something yet, you know, insusceptible to any advice. So yeah, that's the best argument for Pacquiao.
I think it's clear that we see him as an ideal client, since if he listens to like a professional political scientist, like maybe us,
yeah.
And he would be a great leader. here's the thing. I have a soft spot for Manny Pacquiao, really. Like, honest to goodness soft spot, because in a way he represents a very old, simplistic view of the Philippines and a Filipino politician. Like, not he used to be that event. Every time there was a boxing match, he would stop crime. There would be no traffic. And for a moment, everyone would be watching Manny Pacquiao. And during that time, maybe there's an argument that he might be able to unite more people value those times. So there's that number one. Well, that's subjective. But number two, like what you said, he's able to learn, but also because he's only learning, his politics is actually quite simple.
Yeah.
And there's a value to having simple politics, even if it is like, for example, I mean, more and more people are like getting caught up with the EDSA narrative, martial law narrative, sovereignty of China, etc. For him, it's like, how about yung mga kawatan makasama sa
pulungan?
I was like, it's very simple, and it's also catchy. So that kind of attitude, mga corrupt, tigil natin yan. Parang, okay, I can get behind that. And even though I would call, for those of you who watched Game of Thrones, I would call him Ned Stark of Philippine politics. It's naive, but in a way, it's a necessary naive. It represents a very simple but primordial view of good and evil. That
strong one.
Yeah. Kind of need. Yeah, strong one. He has a very clear idea of good and evil. And in a way, that could be refreshing, especially when there's a lot of gray in a lot of the candidates.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maybe we should return simplicity to Philippine politics.
Yeah, because regarding that one, just a brain fart. We are now polarized on one hand, yet on the other hand, we have so much exposed moral gray area. So simplicity can readjust our compass as a society.
So yeah, Manny Pacquiao, the simple president. Oh gosh, it's so cute. He's so anyway, so, and the last one, and this might be possibly controversial, but again, very popular in social media. We have Vice President Leni Robredo. We talked about her in the pink wave. She needs no introduction, but okay. Leni Robredo. Like, for me, Leni Robredo, she is clearly a capable leader, proven that her programs have produced results, and she has, everyone has seen like her programs and what she has accomplished. She even had a rap like "Kulang pa yung dalawang minuto sa debate," just to list down what she did in the pandemic. She has a proven record, but these are all considered, yes. Although, admittedly, she is not the most accomplished in the. One can argue that Isko has produced more results than Leni. But the best part of her is not her per se, but what she was able to inspire in her followers. It is not Leni did this. It's people have done things for Leni. She has inspired an idea of volunteerism. There are doctors who helped in teleconsultation during the pandemic. There are people who helped pack goods. There are young students who went to Katipunan and all these volunteer centers just to help people recover from Odette or storms. So it's really, even if there are elections going on, and even if there's no guarantee that the people they will help would vote for them, they still did it. So in a way, she represents a revival of civic participation, of volunteerism, of citizenship. So even, it's big citizenship. And I think I haven't seen that in any other candidate. you'd see Manny Pacquiao distributing money. You'd see Isco, of course, leading. Yes, definitely. But people still link it back to him. But no, she has allowed the spotlight to go on other citizens. You know, she even highlights them in her rallies. So it's actually a candidacy that's not just about her, but about a new way of citizenship. So yeah, okay, that's my steel manning of Manny Robredo.
Pumunta ka doon sa kanya rally eh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I was observed firsthand that, well, walang bayaran. So at least not from where I was sitting, which was behind a coffee shop. So yeah.
Okay.
Bayaran lang sa ano, ali.
Pagbili ng kape. Pagbili ng kape.
Pagbili ng kape. Ikaw naman.
Again, I would reiterate what you have said regarding Lenny Robredo re-sparking voluntarism among Filipinos, albeit I have my own criticisms against that. But it's good that finally we have a presidential candidate that have created a campaign from the ground up. And that is the best argument for Lenny Robredo is if she can do that in a campaign, in presidential campaign, she can actually be the strongest bridge between civil society and Malacanang among all the candidates that we have. So the civil society had been triggered and have been effective en masse. So it's not only about, you know, specific sectors in civil society, but various sectors. So I think she can provide a strong bridge between civil society and the presidency, stronger than before, I think. And she knows what she's doing. I would not call her technocrat, of course, but she's a grassroots organizer. She knows policy. She knows policy, the policy process. She's Isco-lite in comparison to her achievements. But still, she's capable as a leader. So, yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Just, I think alongside Caliodi, I think they are the more democratic among the characters.
You know, it'd be good if we had like a tier or like a spectrum, like a political compass where we put them.
Wag.
But there'd be too many axes, you know, like X, Y, Z,
X tier.
But yeah, we've done it. Finally,
we've done it.
Done all. And it's like what? Basically 50 minutes. So it's basically an episode. But you know, it's a slice.
It's a pie. Let's call it. It's a pie.
It's a pie. It's a buong pi. Buong pi na yun.
It's a whole pie.
BPI. So that is it. Hopefully, we've demonstrated properly how to steel man all the candidates. They weren't all easy.
Yeah.
In fact, there's not a lot of. Not a lot of material in all of them, but we did it, you know. And perhaps maybe you can perhaps demonstrate your own steel man, maybe on the comments.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think are the strongest arguments for all of them, not just your candidate, but all the others. And that's one way of properly evaluating all the presidential candidates.
Yep.
So yeah, what do you think, Borch? Any last words before we end the steel man session?
Yeah. Again, we are promoting this method and I think we would use it over and over again soon. But again, this method transcends partisanship and lifts up our sense of citizenship beyond specific candidates. Because if you would simply focus on achievements, you would have your biases coming in immediately. But with the steel man method, you are promoting, you know, something greater than any specific candidate, which is, you know, you're back of our heads, we're answering what the public good is for these candidates.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And for some, it's something about their personality. Sometimes it's by the sector they represent. Sometimes it's by their actual platform. Yeah. Sometimes it's by, sometimes their platform, regardless who they are, you know, they represent something. So it's different for each candidate. So you can't apply the same standard for all candidates necessarily. Mm. Yeah. So it depends on what the country needs. Sometimes we need someone with the rule of law. Sometimes we need someone that with a bit that inspires voluntarism, others with a simplicity. So they just represent different things.
Yeah.
Not all candidates can be the same or can compete in the similar race.
Yeah. You know,
sometimes they have their own strengths and weaknesses. We have to recognize that. So okay. Oof. So thank you very much. Heat up. I know, Vice President next, so Senate. Wow, party list.
Na-steelman mo na si Walden eh. Sabi mo cute.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe if we have time, we can do the vice presidents. But for now, please continue the conversation in the comments, in the emails. maybe you can send us an email at bipodcastph@gmail.com, or please check us out. Continue, follow us at Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, and Anchor. But until the next episode,
magandang gabi, mga ka-PI.